Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 13, Text 26. Tatrapidam patinam cha sukayaya panutaye sukayanya panutaye karmani korvatam drishtva nivritosmi viparyayam. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this human form of life, a man and woman unite for sensual pleasure of sex. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. Purport. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, Yan mai tunedi grihamedi sukamitucham. Man and woman both seek sexual enjoyment, and when they are united by the ritualistic ceremony of marriage, they are happy for some time. But finally there is dissension, and thus there are so many cases of separation and divorce. Although every man and woman is actually eager to enjoy life through sexual unity, the result is disunity and distress. Marriage is recommended to give men and women a concession for restricted sex life, which is also recommended in Bhagavad Gita by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dharma Viruddho Bhuteshu Kamosmi. Sex life not against the principles of religion is Krishna. Every living entity is always eager to enjoy sex life because materialistic life consists of eating, sleeping, sex and fear. In animal life, eating, sleeping, sexual enjoyment, and fear cannot be regulated. But for human society, the plan is that although men, like animals, must be allowed to eat, sleep, enjoy sex, and take protection from fear, they must be regulated. The Vedic plan for eating recommends that one take yajna shishta or prasad, food offered to Krishna. Yagna shishtashtina santo muchanti sarva kilbishai. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food that is first offered for sacrifice. Bhagavad Gita 3.13. In material life, one commits sinful activities, especially in eating. And because of sinful activities, one is condemned by nature's law to accept another body, which is imposed as punishment. Sex and eating are essential, and therefore they are offered to human society under Vedic restrictions, so that according to the Vedic injunctions, people may eat, sleep, enjoy sex, be protected from fearful life, and gradually be elevated and liberated from the punishment of material existence. Thus, the Vedic injunctions for marriage offer concession to human society. The idea being that a man and woman united in a ritualistic marriage ceremony should help one another advance in spiritual life. Unfortunately, especially in this age, men and women unite for unrestricted sexual enjoyment. They are victimized, being obliged to take birth in the forms of animals to fulfill their animalistic propensities. The Vedic injunctions therefore warn, Nayam deho deha bhajan niloke kastan kaman arhate vidbhujanye. One should not enjoy sex life like hogs and eat everything, even to the limit of stool. A human being should eat prasad, offered to the deity, and should enjoy sex life according to the Vedic injunctions. He should engage himself in the business of Krishna consciousness. He should save himself from the fearful condition of material existence, and he should sleep only to recover from fatigue due to working hard. The learned Brahmana said that since everything is misused by fruit of workers, he had retired from all fruitive activities. Sorry. So first I'd like to say how happy I am to be here. This is like a very pleasant and unexpected surprise. I was in Bombay, I guess it would have been 30 years ago, when the Juhu Beach Temple was just, it was still under construction. And I don't think it had officially opened yet. And I didn't really get to see much of the city or the temple in its complete form. And I had no idea, really, that such a wonderful temple, another temple and such a wonderful temple was here. So I feel very honored also to have been asked to give the Srimad Bhagavatam class. And just from looking around at, you know, what a beautiful temple this is and how seriously all the devotees here are engaging in their sadhana and what nice Vaishnava etiquette I've experienced already. I feel that I probably have a lot more to learn from all of you than I have to teach you or instruct you. But since the Vaishnava etiquette is that, you know, if somebody's kind of been around for a while, they ask him to give class, so here I am. But that's my... I think I'm mostly here to learn, but I'll try to say something about this verse and Krishna consciousness in general, and hopefully it'll be a little bit helpful, worthwhile, maybe inspiring somebody a little bit in their Krishna consciousness. So I'll just read this translation again. It says, in this human form of life, a man and a woman unite for sensual pleasure of sex, but by actual experience we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. So this is a true statement that, this sage is speaking, I believe, now in this part of the Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj was going through the forest and he came across this sage, and I think he was just lying on the road like a python, and Prahlad Maharaj started questioning him, and then the sage basically started, worked out he was a very elevated devotee, self-realized person, and he started preaching to Prahlad Maharaj. So now I think he's in the process of instructing Prahlad Maharaj about different things. So he's instructing him here that he sees that this unity of man and woman for the purpose of sexual pleasure, basically he's expressing that how he sees it doesn't work. He says, we have observed none of them are happy. And so as I mentioned, this is a true statement. It's not the fault of, that this is true, it's not the fault of any particular man or any particular woman. It's if anything, it's the fault of the system in the sense that the material nature is set up so things will work out like this. Because the real purpose of the human form of life is self-realization. The real purpose of the human form of life is to understand how we're not this material body, we're actually eternal spiritual beings, we're the eternal servants of Krishna, and that we have to, once again, learn how to be engaged in pure devotional service so that at the end of this lifetime we can go back to be with Krishna eternally in the spiritual world. So that's really what the purpose of the human form of life is all about. So when a thing is used for the wrong purpose, then you got a problem, you see? And that's really why this sage is making this observation, because most people don't understand what the actual purpose of this human form of life is. So in ignorance, they try to, you know, use this valuable human form of life for temporary sense pleasure, temporary sense gratification. And as a result, they they suffer. They don't experience the desired result, what they were hoping that they would experience, which is happiness. But as I said, it's actually set up like that, because it's kind of like, it's just like, to give an example, say there's a fire, okay? And two young boys come along, and they don't know what that fire is. They're attracted to it because it's, you know, it looks, it's bright, and they just, fire is naturally attractive to, you know, the senses of the conditioned soul. So they see that, okay, there's pieces of wood in this fire. So they just start, you know, each one of them takes out a piece of wood, and they start running around, and, you know, like boys do, and they just start, you know, waving it all over the place, and one boy throws a log at the other boy, and, you know, and he catches it, but he doesn't catch it on the fire end. He's lucky, you know, and then the other boy throws one at him, and they're going back and forth. Well, it's just a matter of time. One of them's going to get burnt, right? One of them's going to get burnt. Something, because why? Because that's not what fire is meant for. Fire is not meant for playing around. You know, fire is meant for to use for heating, cooking, etc. I mean, there are specific purposes for fire. And if you use fire for what it's meant to be used for, you can, you know, accomplish something. You know, you can get some benefit from it, a lot of benefit from it. But if you don't understand, if you don't know what fire is and you just use it in your ignorance to just play around with it, you're going to get hurt. You're going to get burnt. And so it's the same thing here. Same. It's an analogy, in other words. The idea is that human life is meant for self-realization. And simultaneously, we have these material bodies and, you know, they have these sort of material inclinations. Prabhupada mentions eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So as a concession, you know, as a concession, ritualistic marriages, is arrangements for ritualistic marriage are presented in the you know, the Vedic culture. As Prabhupada quotes here, dharmo viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi, sex life that is not against principles of religion is Krishna. See? So the sex life that's being referred to here by this sage who's instructing Prahlad Maharaj is not that. He's not referring to that. He's referring to the other thing, which is sex life, which is against the principles of religion, which is not Krishna. That ends in suffering. You know, that ends in suffering. That's explained in I think it's the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how happiness and the mode of passion, it starts off like nectar, but it always ends in distress. So that's the kind of sex life that this sage who's instructing Prahlad Maharaj is referring to here. Sex life, which is not against the principles of religion, is Krishna, and it doesn't cause that kind of a result. It doesn't produce that kind of a result. But still, it's not meant to, it's not that, it's also, it's not the goal. In other words, it's not the, you know, the end, the goal of life is to engage in sex life according to religious principles and by so doing be able to enjoy the pleasures, you know, that are thereby experienced. No, it's a means to an end. You know, it's something that, because we have these material bodies and they have certain, as I said, you know, needs, something that some of us need to do, just like eating and sleeping. But it's very much a means to an end. You know, Prabhupada once said, in Krishna consciousness, nothing is prohibited, but everything has to be regulated for higher achievement. So that's the idea, you know, that this eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is not within the Vedic culture and the Vedic worldview, it's not prohibited, but it's regulated for higher achievement. It's done in such a way that it does not interfere with our progressive march, you know, back home, back to Godhead. You see? So that's the important thing to understand here. And okay, and sort of, you know, getting right into what I really wanted to talk about today. The sage is pointing out that you know, people. Men and women unite for sensual pleasure of sex, but by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. So where is the happiness? If it's not there, where is it? You know, where is the happiness to be found? Well, from our philosophy, we understand the happiness is to be found in pure devotional service. You know, when we're able to, as I mentioned right at the beginning, you know, we're not these material bodies, we're eternal spiritual beings, we're part and parcel of Krishna, we're eternally his servants. And when we once again learn how to engage in pure devotional service, then we will experience the happiness that is, you know, that the natural quality of the soul. The soul is eternal, full of knowledge, full of bliss. So as we progress towards that, you know, that platform of pure devotional service, then the happiness, which is the nature of the soul is by nature, you know, full of knowledge and full of happiness, that becomes uncovered. It becomes revived. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sabu Kabanaya Shravanadi Sudhi Chitta Kure Udaya. That pure love for Krishna is lying dormant within the heart of every living entity, and it's awakened. Shravanadi Sudhi Chitta Kure Udaya. It's awakened by the process of devotional service, which in that particular verse mentions it begins by hearing and chanting. So as we progress in devotional service, then we'll start to experience that happiness that every living entity is looking for. Anandamaya Vyasat. Prabhupada used to quote from the Vedanta Sutra that every living entity is hankering after pleasure. You know, that's the goal of life. That's the goal of every living entity, to, you know, experience pleasure. But in order to be able to do that, We have to have some knowledge, and we have to, you know how to apply it practically in life. So on this point of devotional service, so, you know, we're very fortunate we've come in contact with this knowledge, you know, Srila, by, you know, coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada, we've come in, had the good fortune to have access to knowledge that's coming in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. You know, Prabhupada is representing a very specific Vaishnava Sampradaya that goes back to, you know, Lord Chaitanya and ultimately back to Krishna. So, you know, we're fortunate to have received perfect knowledge, knowledge that's being presented by God to man through this perfect disciplic succession as a result of coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada. So we know how to engage in devotional service in general. But you know, since we're all devotees here, this is, you know, we could sort of get a little bit more in-house in our discussion. Like, you know, we all know there's 9 processes of devotional service: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, etc., like that. And that Prabhupada on different occasions would say that, you know, if one engaged in 9 processes of devotional service, he can become perfect. Or even 8, 7, 6. And, you know, so he'd go as far sometimes as to say, even if you can engage in one of those processes fully, you know, you can become a fully Krishna conscious. And he would give the example of how Maharaj Prakrit just heard and Sukadev Goswami just spoke. He just chanted. And like that. So that's, you know, that's like the general instruction. But on other occasions, Prabhupada gave us kind of, you know, some, how would you say, inside tips, some inside hints on what, how we could perform our devotional service in such a way as to best facilitate, you know, our achieving our desired goal of pure devotional service. And on several different occasions, he did make the statement that in order to be quickly, not just quickly, in order to be very quickly recognized by Krishna, preaching is the shortcut process. That's something Prabhupada said on, as I said, more than one occasion. And actually, you'll find that, you know, it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam and different purports. He said it when he gave class and in conversations and things like that. So that's a tip. It's kind of like, just like if, say, somebody's a businessman, you know, and their objective is to make millions and billions of dollars. So if they're fortunate to get the association of some other very successful businessman, and that very successful businessman tells them, hey, I got a hot tip for you. Invest in such and such company. You know, buy that stock because it's going to go up. And if you, you know, just put a, invest, buy a lot of that stock, it's going to go up and you're going to make a lot of money. And if you, you know, if you have a friend like that and you get a good advice like that and you do it, then wow, you know, you can, within a very short time, you could make a lot of money. See? So in the same way, you know, we have, there's the general process and then, you know, which is works and will enable us to progress. But we have the good fortune of having the association of, you know, Srila Prabhupada, who's, you know, one of the topmost level of pure devotees that, you know, exists. And he's giving us, like, little inside tips here. You know, like, it's just like if you had that friend who's a, you know, super successful, wealthy businessman, and he's giving you some inside tips, what you could do to, you know, accelerate the process of, you know, becoming wealthy yourself. So in the same way, Prabhupada's giving us hints like that, and that's one of the hints he gave. You know, to be very quickly, not just quickly, but very, he said this on, as I said, more than one, several occasions, to be very quickly recognized by Krishna, preaching is the shortcut process. That's our goal, you know, and it's by saying to be recognized by Krishna, that means, you know, being promoted or elevated to the platform of pure devotional service. And this is, so that's there. You know, Prabhupada made that statement. And we can see that was his mood. You know, that was what Prabhupada did himself. It wasn't like something that Prabhupada just said, but then, you know, we saw him kind of sitting around all day just reading and chanting on his own. And no, Prabhupada, what Prabhupada was instructing us to do, he was the best example of that. You know, he was so fully engaged in preaching. I mean, they couldn't even get Prabhupada to, you know, even towards the end of his life when he was hardly able to function, they couldn't stop him from going out and preaching. So he was, you know, he set the perfect example of the preaching spirit. And this instruction is actually, it's consistent, you know, with the Vaishnava Siddhanta that's been presented to us, you know, right down through the ages. Like, for instance, 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya, when he was here, he gave a lot of different instructions. You know, he emphasized the importance of chanting the holy name as the only means for self-realization in the age of Kali. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Nasti Eva Gatir Anyata. He also informed everybody that just simply by this process of chanting the holy name, one becomes fully liberated and goes back to Godhead. There's that famous verse in the, so I think it's the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kalaya Dosanade Rajan Asti Eko Mahadguna Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Vrajat, that this age of Kali is an ocean of faults, but it has one redeeming quality, that simply by chanting the holy name, one becomes completely liberated and goes back to Godhead. So, you know, these were things that Lord Chaitanya emphasized. But Lord Chaitanya also emphasized preaching. There's that famous pastime where Lord Chaitanya was touring South India. And he visited this one village, Korma, Kormashtan, I think was the name of it. And ironically, there was a Brahmin there whose name was Korma. I don't know if the village was named after him or what, but his name was Korma as well. So he visited the home of this Brahmin. And this Brahmin was actually, he was a bona fide Brahmin, a Pakka Brahmin. You know, him and his whole family, they were doing all the things that, you know, Brahmins are supposed to do. They received Lord Chaitanya properly. You know, they offered him the proper respect, and they, you know, they washed his feet, and they sprinkled some water on their head, and, you know, I think they took the charanamrita, like everything. They did everything properly. And Lord Chaitanya was very pleased with their reception and everything. And this Brahmin, you know, at the end of the little meeting there, this Brahmin expressed to Lord Chaitanya, you know, he said, I'm really finding it difficult to remain here in material life, and I'd like to just, you know, leave the whole thing and travel with you. You know, he wanted to just renounce his bona fide Brahminical family situation and just go with Lord Chaitanya and travel. And Lord Chaitanya instructed him. He didn't approve of that. He didn't agree with that proposal. He didn't accept that proposal. He said, no. He said, actually, no, don't speak like that. And then he gave him this instruction. He said, Yare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Agaya Agaya Guruhana Tare Desh. That wherever you go, whoever you meet, instruct them about the teachings of Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita. And in this way, become a guru and here in your land and liberate everybody in this land. So that was the instruction Lord Chaitanya gave. In other words, by saying that, Lord Chaitanya was expressing or indicating that it was more important to preach Krishna consciousness than it was to give up his family situation and just, you know, travel around with Lord Chaitanya as his assistant or servant or something like that. Lord Chaitanya saw that as more important. Remain in your position and just become a guru. You know, preach Krishna consciousness. You'll become Krishna conscious by doing that. And you'll be able to help so many other people, your family members, your relatives, all the people in your village here. They'll also get the benefit if you do that. And actually, he went on to mention, you know, sort of express that. And then his next instruction, he said, actually, if you do this, one day you'll have my association again. And then he said, but or rather, you'll never lose it. So he's making the point that he's present in that instruction. Lord Chaitanya is non different from that instruction to preach Krishna consciousness. You see? And Prabhupada, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in his purport to that verse, says this is the mission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is the mission. This is actually why Prabhupada, you know, went to all the trouble, you know, to come to the West at such an advanced age and establish so many temples and write so many books. He wanted to create an army of preachers, you know, because he wanted to see the whole world become Krishna conscious. And in pursuance of this instruction of Lord Chaitanya, he saw that, you know, that's the process. It's mentioned that a sannyasi remains. There's two types of sannyasis. There's a Gosthyanandi and a Bhajanandi. And Bhajanandi is mostly concerned about his own purification and advancement in spiritual life, whereas the Gosthyanandi, he remains and lives among his disciples for the purpose of organizing missionary activities. And see, so that was what Prabhupada was a perfect example of somebody who's following that instruction of Lord Chaitanya. Wherever he went, whoever he met, you know, whether it was somebody a newspaper reporter trying to interview him or somebody or whatever, you know, Prabhupada, somebody sitting next to him on a bus or anything, Prabhupada just talked to him about Krishna. And he tried to inspire that person attract that person to engage in devotional service on some level. You see? And that's what we're meant to do. We're meant to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. And if we do like that, you know, this, just like this movement can spread. You know, just like Prabhupada had such amazing success. Well, the thing is this, you know, is it that there's only supposed to be one pure devotee forever? And as Prabhupada wanted some of his followers also to, you know, progress and, you know, towards pure devotional service. You know, not that we could ever be on a level like what Prabhupada was on, obviously, but, you know, as we make progress in our devotional service, we can become more and more empowered by Krishna. And, you know, the same, this movement can spread by the same principle that, you know, that it spread by when Prabhupada was here. There's a very interesting statement to that effect. Prabhupada, in one purport in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, he comments, he says something to that effect, and it's interesting. It's, when you hear this, you'll see, it's almost like Prabhupada's talking about himself, but anyway, he's describing the process here in these couple sentences of how the Krishna conscious, how preaching works, and how the Krishna conscious movement spreads. He says, this is the fourth canto, chapter 29, text 46 in the purport. He says, a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. So that's, once again, it sounds just like Prabhupada. He's talking about himself, but of course he's not thinking like that. So it says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. See? So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls, enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. So there you have it. That's how it works. That's how the Krishna conscious movement spreads. You know, it's Krishna reciprocating with the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls. Okay? The pure devotee who's always thinking of how fallen conditioned souls can be delivered. Krishna's reciprocating with that, with the attempt, with that desire of his devotee. And that's how this Krishna conscious movement spread. That's the explanation of how we're all sitting here today. You know, we're a result of, you know, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna's reciprocation with Srila Prabhupada. You know, what is our qualification? You know, at least speaking for myself, I'm sure I had no qualification. But it's just, like it says here, you know, Lord Krishna reciprocating, influenced by the merciful devotee's attempt to deliver the fallen souls, he enlightens the people in general from within by his causeless mercy. It's causeless. Causeless mercy. Yeah? I mean, there is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the seventh chapter, it goes, Yesham tvantikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvanda mohaniya mukta bhajante mam judavrataha. It goes, only those who have acted piously in this life and in previous lives and whose sinful activities are completely eradicated can engage in my devotional service with firm determination. That verse is there. You know, it's describing who is eligible to engage in devotional service. Only one who's engaged in pious activities in this life and in previous lives, whose sinful activities are completely eradicated. Okay, so that statement's there. And not to discredit it, you know. But there was one very interesting occasion where one of the devotees asked Prabhupada, they were on a morning walk, and a devotee actually quoted that verse, you know, and he asked Prabhupada, it says in the Bhagavad Gita, and he quoted that verse, he says, does that mean that all of us in our previous lives were engaged in pious activities and you know, like that? And Prabhupada interrupted him and said, I have created your pious activities. Okay? I have created your pious activities. So in other words, the point being, once again, not to, you know, discredit what Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavad Gita, but what's happening here now in this present day and age is a concession is being made. Because by and large, none of us qualify. According to that criterion, you know, that in being engaged in pious activities in this life, previous lives, that our sinful activities are completely eradicated, who qualifies, according to that criterion? Nobody. So, due to his causeless mercy, you know, Lord Chaitanya has lowered the bar. You know that expression? Just like, you know, I don't know how familiar you are. Here in India, in America, they have this thing called the high jump. It's athletes, they run, and they have to jump over a bar, you know? And sometimes if the bar is too high, then nobody clears it, You know, so they have to bring the bar down a notch. And if they don't clear it at that height, then they bring it down a little. They keep bringing it down until somebody, at least one person, can clear the bar, and he's the winner. So the point is being that, you know, Lord Chaitanya, seeing the condition of the, you know, the conditioned souls, the living entities in the Kali Yuga, he's realized, hey, if I go by that standard that, you know, that Krishna presented 5,000 years ago, that people have to be engaged in pious activities in this life and in previous lives, they have to be, their sinful activities have to be completely eradicated, nobody's going to get a chance to engage in devotional service. So Lord Chaitanya has had to lower the bar, and he's really lowered it. You know, it's been lowered considerably, right? So anyway, so this is how we're all here today, you know, that Prabhupada had this incredibly, you know, sincere desire to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master, which was to, you know, preach in the Western countries in the English language. And that was the instruction he received from his spiritual master on their first meeting, you know, when Prabhupada first went to, was dragged by his friend to meet Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, and before he paid his obeisances, and as he was getting up, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj gave him that instruction. He says, you two look like nice, educated young men. You should preach this cult of Lord Chaitanya in the Western countries in the English language. And Prabhupada, you know, it's described in the Prabhupada Lilamrita that Prabhupada was flabbergasted. He hadn't even, you know, been introduced or anything, and then he was receiving this instruction. Anyway, Prabhupada, I think it's in the final words of the concluding words of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he sort of relates this whole pastime, and he explains how, also right at the end of his stay here, his spiritual master stay, just before he was departing, Prabhupada wrote a letter to Bhaktisiddhanta expressing that, you know, you have so many disciples, they're sannyasis, they're helping you directly, and I'm a grihasta. What can I do to serve you? He wrote a letter, something to that effect. And a fortnight before Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj passed away, Prabhupada received the reply, which was the exact same instruction that he received at that first meeting, which is, I think you seem to be like an educated young man, intelligent. I think you have the potential to become a, you know, good preacher in the English language. And that's what I'd like to see you do, preach in the Western countries in the English language. It'll be good for you. It'll be good for them. So Prabhupada, that was Prabhupada's life and soul. When he got that same instruction again, that's it. You know, that was, he didn't need to hear anything more. That it was already locked in there. And then upon receiving that letter from his spiritual master, that became his, if it all already hadn't been, his life's mission. And so here we are, you know, because Prabhupada made that his, he made the instruction of the spiritual master his life and soul, and Krishna, you know, reciprocating with that, has allow this Krishna conscious movement to develop. He, as he says here, he enlightened people in general from within by his causeless mercy. And so many of us, you know, who really had no qualification, were allowed to be inspired, you know, become attracted to engage in devotional service, and this Krishna conscious movement spread. Actually, Prabhupada describes this in his own words. Well, these are his words too, but he describes this very nicely in a letter that he wrote to Sudama, who was one of his disciples. He's no longer with us. He was a sannyasi at one point. Anyway, Prabhupada wrote to him a letter in 1972, and this is an excerpt from that letter, and it's expressing the same sentiment. Prabhupada says, when I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, who will listen to me in this horrible, sinful place? All right, I shall stay a little longer. At least I can distribute a few of my books. That is something. So he was feeling, he wasn't feeling encouraged, you know, because nothing was, he was there, he was trying, nothing was happening. But then Prabhupada goes on to say, but Krishna was all along preparing something I could not see. He brought you to me one by one, sincere American boys and girls, to be trained up for doing the work of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now I can see that it is a miracle. Otherwise, your city of New York, one single old man with only a few books to sell for barely getting edibles, how can he survive? What to speak of introducing a God-conscious movement for saving humankind? That is Krishna's miracle. So that's, you know, Prabhupada expressing that one key phrase in that little paragraph is, but Krishna was all along preparing something I could not see. That's how it works. You see, you know, the devotee just has to be really fixed in executing the instruction of the spiritual master and just have faith that Krishna is observing. And at the right time, at the right moment, Krishna is going to reciprocate. And that's what Prabhupada was expressing there. You know, he was trying, he was, you know, nothing much was happening. Prabhupada was actually in New York for almost a year before he had any followers. Nothing for the first, about 10 or 11 months that Prabhupada was in New York, nothing really much was happening. And then, but he kept trying. You know, he wasn't discouraged. He maintained his enthusiasm, his determination, his perseverance like that. And Krishna, the whole time, is observing. And Krishna, at the appropriate moment, Krishna reciprocated. So we have to try to, once again, follow in Prabhupada's footsteps. And getting back to that instruction of Lord Chaitanya, he said, wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. You know, there's this very nice verse, that, just to help us, you know, kind of see what a spiritual instruction that is. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ishvara sarva bhutanam radeshe arjuna tishtati brahmayan sarva bhutanam yantra rudhani maya, that the Supreme Lord is situated within everyone's heart, and he's directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as if on a machine made of material energy. So the idea being that, just trying to put these two instructions together, Lord Chaitanya is saying that wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. And we should see that as, you know, as a totally transcendental way. In other words, when whoever you meet, whoever you're with, think of that as Krishna's arrangement. And you can meditate on that verse, how the Supreme Lord is situated within everyone's heart. He's directing the wanderings of all living entities. Right? So in other words, it's no accident. When you're with whoever you are, whoever you're with, don't see it. It's not an accident that you happen to be with that particular person. That's an arrangement by Krishna, the Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead within your heart and that person's heart. Krishna's arranged for you to be with that spirit soul at that moment so that they can hear about Krishna, so that you can speak to them about Krishna, and so they can get an opportunity to be introduced to devotional service. See, so if we have that vision, you know, if we're meditating like that, you'll always be alive, and we'll see everything as an opportunity for preaching. Right? And so, of course, there's various ways to preach. And, you know, once on one occasion, Srila Prabhupada, two occasions, Srila Prabhupada was talking with Shivaram Maharaj. And Shivaram Maharaj asked Prabhupada, of the three main programs you've given us for preaching, which, as far as, according to his analysis, were Harinam, Prasadam distribution, and book distribution, he said, which is the most important? And Prabhupada said, they're all equally important. And then on another occasion, Shivaram Maharaj asked Prabhupada that exact same question, and he got the exact same answer. So those are the three main programs we have for preaching, and at least, you know, there is support for the idea that they're all equally important, and that's there. But then, of course, on other occasions also, Prabhupada did emphasize book distribution as being, particularly important, and it's not contradictory. It's like, you know, like I think it's, this is an expression, all contradictions are reconciled in the, you know, inconceivable transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. It's not a contradiction. It's just spiritual variety that simultaneously, you know, Prabhupada did give particular emphasis to book distribution. Now, there was one occasion in Los Angeles, Prabhupada gave a very nice lecture, and at the end of the lecture, he said, so print as many books and as many languages as possible and distribute, and this Krishna consciousness movement will automatically spread. So, and there's so many statements to that effect, you know, emphasizing the importance of that. So that's, a very specific, practical way in which we can preach. There's one other occasion, just, you know, because I'm still thinking about that instruction of Lord Chaitanya, wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. There was one occasion where there was this is more than one occasion, but there was a Mataji. She was a book distributor. I think her name was Mula Prakriti, and she had the good fortune. She just come back from Sankirtan, and Prabhupada saw her, and I think it was in Hawaii, and he told the servant, ask her if she'd like to come in. You know, so Prabhupada, she said, of course. And she went in. She had the opportunity to talk to Prabhupada, and And Prabhupada was asking her about how's the preaching going, what kind of people do you distribute the books to, what do you say, like that. And then at one point in the their meeting, some three sannyasis or three male devotees, I think one of them was definitely a sannyasi, came in the room and they were they mentioned Prabhupada, so where are you coming from? And they were coming from a preaching program. They were preaching at I can't remember what the venue was. But Prabhupada asked them, so, and how many books were distributed? And they said, well, Prabhupada, actually, no books were distributed. And Prabhupada said, why is that? And he said, well, actually, we kind of spaced out. Somebody forgot to bring the table and forgot, we weren't organized. We didn't bring the books and the book table, and we didn't get it set up or something to that. I can't remember exactly what the excuse was. Prabhupada said, and then this is a famous, statement. Prabhupada said, what is the use of your 3 minutes preaching? If they read one line of my book, their entire life will be changed. That's a famous statement by Srila Prabhupada. And then he pointed to that Mataji, Mula Prakriti, and he said, she's preaching and she's distributing the books. And anyway, so he emphasized the importance of preaching by distributing books. What is the use of your, whatever it is, 3 minutes, 10 minutes lecture? If they read one line of my book, their entire life will be changed. That's, once again, it's not to denigrate or play down the importance of speaking, because, you have to speak in order to be able to distribute somebody a book. But speaking is important, right? But we should, those of us who are doing, verbal preaching, preaching by speaking to people, we should always have that, as the distribution of books as a goal, as an end in our mind. In other words, our speaking is a means to an end. That's the point. Our speaking is a means to an end. The end is always that we want to engage people in getting Prabhupada's books, getting ideally all of them. Actually, there's one occasion, I remember there's one time in Los Angeles, 1976, where Prabhupada, some devotees started selling sets of the entire sets of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was very pleased. He said, This is the best type of preaching that will revolutionize the spreading of Krishna consciousness, and this is the most best preaching that anybody's done so far. So Prabhupada actually said he wanted every American, he made the point, to have a full set of Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. He went as far as to say that. So anyway, that should always be something that we're meditating on, when we're preaching, to try to connect people with Srila Prabhupada by at least, getting them some book like that. How are we doing for time? This class ends at 9:15. Okay. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, we say that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Bharat Bhumita Hoila Manushya Janma Jar, Janma Sarthak Kari Kar Parokar. First of all, he says that we should perfect our lives. But in case of me, or I say that already I am not so purified, or in devotional service also I am not so elevated, so that I can preach others. So that underestimation is there. Means I think that I cannot preach because I am not pure or like that. Purity is force. That is also one statement.
Yeah. Oh, you can't preach like Radhanath Maharaj, but you could do something. You can go up to somebody and you can just be a little bit friendly, and hand them a book and say, "Hey, check this out. You'll like it." And we just ask people to give a donation. We don't even sell these. I mean, anybody can do that, right? So there's different levels, according to, who you are, how long you've been a devotee, what you say when you're with a person will vary, but everybody can do that, and that's, that could be the most important thing a person's heard in their life. I mean, it can be very simple. I mean, that's actually my service is distributing books, and it's so simple. I'll give you the key to success and distributing books and preaching in general. In 1975 in Atlanta, Prabhupada met with the book distributors. It was one of the few times that he met with a group of book distributors like that, the American devotees who were distributing in the airports. So there's one particular devotee who was the spokesperson, and he said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, when we go around to the temples Devotees asked us to give class on book distribution technique. And so Prabhupada interrupted him and said, so what do you tell them? And devotees said, well, you know, we tell them first they have to chant 16 rounds and follow the regulative principles. And then Prabhupada interrupted him again and said, yes, that is our only technique, to become very devout followers of the rules and regulations. So he said, in other words, purity is the force. That's what Prabhupada was emphasizing at that point in time. Purity is the force. If you have like a really good sadhana, you know, if you're chanting your 16 rounds and coming to the temple program and, you know, observing the Vaishnava etiquette, associating with the devotees nicely and following the regulative principles, then, you know, you're going to be empowered. When you go out there, you're going to be empowered. And then beyond that, really all you have to do is just a few really simple little things. And I'll even tell them to you right now. It's so simple, okay? This is so simple to distribute a book. To start off with, you have to, obviously you have to establish a rapport with somebody, okay? And I've been doing this for, well, I started about 36 years ago. There's different ways you can do that, you know? You can use an approach called what's called the qualifying question. You can ask a person, excuse me, are you from here or from out of town? Or say something like that. Are you local or from out of town? That's okay. That works to a certain extent. But even more effective than that and more parampara is if you give them a little compliment to start off with. You know, actually, Prabhupada used to quote Prabodhananda Saraswati. He was one of the predecessor acharyas. I think he was the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, the brother of Venkata Bhatta Swami, who actually Lord Chaitanya stayed in their home. He stayed in the home of Venkata Bhatta down in Sri Rangam for 4 months during the rainy season. That's when Gopal Bhatta Goswami got to, you know, do some service for Lord Chaitanya. Anyway, his Venkata Bhatta's brother, I forget his name, but when he took sannyas, his name was Prabodhananda Saraswati. And Prabhupada used to quote him. There's a Sanskrit verse about Dante Nathaya. I can't remember the Sanskrit, but the effect is that you have to fall down on the person's feet and be very humble. And then, you know, you flatter them in so many different ways. Oh, you are so wealthy. You are so aristocratic. You are so intelligent. This, that, the other thing. And then the person, when he sees how, you know, humble you're being and everything, at some point he goes, okay, what do you want? And then he says, okay, please forget everything you know and consider the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, like that. So Prabhupada was saying the same way, flatter them like anything. Right? So it's very simple. So I do that. When I see a person, like if I was approaching you, I say, sir, I like your hairstyle. I wish I could do that. Just something simple like that. Or I might say, sir, I saw the professional appearance. Way to go. Just a little compliment, you know, just something of your own, like, creation. You know, it doesn't have to be like mechanical or stereotype. You just look at the person and you just make an observation. All right, what about that person is impressive? Or what is that person priding themselves on? You know, are they priding themselves on their appearance? Are they priding themselves on their, you know, whatever? And then you compliment them on that. That's it. You know, and then you'll be amazed at how they respond to that. You know, because people don't hardly compliment each other anymore. Everybody's so hung, you know, worried about their, you know, what they got to do and everything like that. No, people don't kind of, you know, it's kind of like falling out of the repertoire of human behaviors as Kali Yuga progresses. So that'll help you, you know, they'll drop their defenses. If you do it properly, if you do it nicely, they'll just drop their guard. And then it's like you got a foot in the door. Then you just introduce yourself. You say, hi, I'm from Mumbai. Where are you from? And they'll tell you where they're from. And you say, great, here. This is on meditation and yoga. And then you could say, you know, it helps to relieve stress, focus the mind. Actually, I distribute Bhagavad Gita, and pretty much right away, I just show them the pictures. Prabhupada said it's very important to try to distribute the book. The best way to distribute books is to, on the merit of the book. So that means preaching. And I find that that works. And the Bhagavad Gita's we're distributing in America, we have that picture of the the man with the cow, the bull's head and the bull with the man's head. So actually, that's the first thing I show them. Sometimes devotees are shocked when I tell them that. They think, whoa, you show them that picture? That's heavy. But, you know, the truth works. You know, I show them that picture and I say, here, this picture here is about, I say, well, actually, I ask them a question. I say, hey, before I show them the picture, I say, you heard of karma? And practically everybody says yes. I say, well, here, let me show you this picture about karma. And I show them the picture. And sometimes people go, whoa, or like, you know, they go, youch, you know. But then I explain to him, I say, yeah, this picture is showing how the roles eventually get reversed. You know, this is a man with a bull's head, and that's a bull with a man's head. And it's just showing that what goes around comes around. See, but I don't, like, tell them, you know, you're sinful. This is what's going to happen to you. Nothing like that. I let them put two and two together. People aren't stupid, you know. They know, there's an expression in America, if the shoe fits, wear it. So, you know, they can immediately, it has impact. They get that idea. And then I show them the picture of change, the changing bodies picture, the picture of showing how the person is going through the different stages of life. And I just say, look, and this picture is showing how we're more than just the material body, how the spiritual essence remains the same, how it continues even after the body's finished. And then I show them the picture of a yogi meditating on the super soul, and I say, here's a picture of a yogi meditating. Don't worry if you can't sit like that. You know, in other words, a little bit of humor, some flattery, philosophy, and then I just say, anyway, check this out. People just give a donation. We're not trying to sell this. We don't sell these books. We're just trying to share this with other people. We really want you to read it. We just ask that you give a donation, whatever you like, just from your heart. And that works. And, just by those few simple lines there, you know, a lot of times people are walking away with a Bhagavad Gita. Their spiritual life has begun, you know, and you've been fortunate enough to, you know, uses the instrument. You've been instrumental in hooking that person up with Srila Prabhupada, linking them up with the Parampara disciplic succession. So you could see from in that little description there, you don't have to be nice if somebody can become a great, a preacher, very like erudite preacher, speaking from the Shastra, knowing a lot of shlokas and being able to present the philosophy really nicely. That's wonderful, but it's not like you have to wait to become on the level of, that level, or become a pure devotee before you start preaching. No, it's the preaching itself is a process for, becoming advanced and, gradually progressing towards that level. So just the idea is just start from wherever you're at, and then the expertise will gradually develop. I mean, that's Krishna's instruction in 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satat yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upyantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. And as Krishna gives us the intelligence or ability, how we can engage more and more favorably in his service when he sees that we're trying regularly, continually trying and trying to do it nicely. And then that Krishna, reciprocates in that way by giving us that inspiration and enlightenment, how to improve the quality and the quantity of our service. Yeah. Anybody have any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.